Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, Pope Benedict visits the Italian port cities of Genoa and Savona this weekend, pointing to Our Lady as a symbol of hope. And we talk to Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, nuncio to Egypt and the Arab League, about an initiative introducing diplomats to the Church and the Holy See. A Marian pilgrimage to Italy's northern region of Liguria this weekend for Pope Benedict XVI, taking him Saturday and Sunday to the port cities of Genoa and Savona on the Mediterranean coast. The Pope's pastoral visit takes him to two important Marian shrines, Our Lady of Mercy in Savona and Our Lady of the Watch or of the Guard in Genoa. He'll also be paying a visit to a children's hospital in Genoa, one of Europe's most prestigious pediatric institutions. The Pope will also be addressing religious and members of the Ligurian community in Genoa's St. Lawrence Cathedral on Sunday and later preside Mass downtown in Victory Square. A spokesman for the Catholic Knights of Malta, himself from an old Genoan family, Gian Antioco Chiavari, told me of the importance of the Marian aspect of the Pope's visit this weekend.
We are from Genoa, and certainly in Genoa and in Savona, everybody is very, very impressed from this decision of the Holy Father to visit the two cities, especially because he's going to visit the two most important shrines of the two cities.
The Marian shrines.
The Marian shrines. Mm-hmm. And the most important in all Liguria, which is the region that includes Genoa and Savona, which is the shrine of Our Lady of the Guard, and in Savona, the shrine of Our Lady of Mercy.
And it's quite important in this Marian month of May as well.
Yes, absolutely. And also because, as we all know, John Paul II was very devoted to Holy Mary. And everybody was looking at how this Holy Father was going to follow in that. And I believe that this Holy Father being himself, and like he wants to be, but this visit is also, I believe, a message of continuing needing the help and the blessing of Our Lady.
Now, of course, also, Genoa has very special significance for the American people. Pope Benedict has just returned from the United States, his last trip.
Certainly, Cristoforo Colombo was a Genoese, and of which we are very proud of, because he discovered nothing but America. So we know, but he certainly was in a republic that at that time had one of the most important harbor and port in the world, the known world. And the visit of the Holy Father in the United States certainly so many people that remembered this coming from Genoa. Myself, when I'm in the United States, everybody knows where Genoa is only because Cristoforo Colombo comes, so I would prefer they come to visit and see. It's a nice city. But anyway, certainly it is very important, this visit for the people of Genoa and Savona, because the devotion to the Holy Mary is something very important for us. And the underlining of this with the visit of the Holy Father is something that proves us that our two shrines are important all over the world, not only in Genoa and Savona.
Saturday, the main events for the Pope, a Mass in Savona's Piazza del Popolo Square, and visits to the Shrine of Our Lady of Mercy and to the apartments where Pope Pius VII was held prisoner by Napoleon Bonaparte in the 19th century. Bishop of Savona Noli, Vittorio Lupi, began his ministry in the diocese just over 2 months ago. We asked him how he feels about the Pope's visit at the start of his new job.
It's a great gift, not just for the diocese, but also for me. It's a very moving moment of great joy to be able to welcome the Pope to our diocese and to place ourselves at his disposal so that we can receive his pastoral guidelines in a way that will help us live our faith in a truer and more authentic way in today's world.
Well, Veronica Scarisbrick spoke to our Vatican expert, Joan Lewis, ahead of the Pope's arrival in Liguria this weekend. She tells us more about Savona's Shrine of Our Lady of Mercy.
Very interesting story about this shrine. It's a church and surrounding buildings, actually. It's about 6 kilometers from the center of Savona, which is in Liguria, in northern Italy, of course. And Our Lady of Mercy is the patroness of Savona. And this is built on a site commemorating the apparition of the Virgin Mary to a shepherd, Blessed Antonio Botta, in 1536. She appeared to him, interestingly enough, during a time of war between Savona and Genoa, and she invited both cities, both parties, if you will, to exercise mercy and not justice. She made this plea through him.
Poor shepherd, but very devoted shepherd, Antonio Botta, was walking with his rosary and he was praying. And when he tried to drink some water from a small river,
stream.
Small stream, mm-hmm. Suddenly a beautiful lady with a wonderful light appeared to him and told him that she was the mother of Jesus. She was Holy Mary. As he was very known as a very devoted and good man, everybody listened to him, and this is how this this sanctuary, this shrine, began so many, many years ago, many centuries ago.
Interestingly enough, we have huge choirs prepared to sing at the papal mass and so forth, but there will be a small choir of 6 that will perform for the Pope during his private visit to the shrine. And there's a number of other little interesting facts about Savona, which I'm going to get to in just a minute. But after the Pope visits the shrine, he's going to go by car to the Piazza del Popolo in Savona at 5:45. He will celebrate Mass and obviously deliver the homily. After that celebration, he goes to the Bishop's Palace for a private visit to the rooms of Pope Pius VII. And then about 8:15, this is interesting, he is taken by helicopter from the old dock of the port of Savona to Genoa. So 90 minutes later, he will land, and then he's taken to the shrine of the Virgin of the Watch, watch in the sense of guard, not a watch to tell times. And that's very high in a hill, so he will be taken there, and he's going to spend the night at the shrine. Now, interestingly enough, for the Pope's time in Savona, some of the things that the diocese wants us to know, when the Pope visits this shrine in Savona, and then the next day, the night and the next day, the shrine of Our Lady of the Watch, he is going to give each shrine what is known as the Golden Rose. Now, in the 11th century, the popes used to give reigning sovereigns this golden rose. And, of course, historians say they took this rose, which was very weighty and very valuable. Very often the sovereigns took it and melted it down for money. But anyway, over time, this fell into disuse, and the practice was then brought back. And then just actually last century, the popes decided no longer to give these to, you know, reigning monarchs, but instead to give this golden rose to shrines around the world. The only one in Italy up to this weekend that has it is the Shrine of Loreto, and the 2 shrines that Pope will visit in Savona and Genoa are going to receive this golden rose. Now, actually, the last monarch to receive it, the Italian monarch, Queen Elena, received it in 1937, and the last Italian one. And then you had the Grand Duchess of Luxembourg, Charlotte, who received it from the Pope in 1956. So this will be a very interesting and very moving ceremony, also given the rarity with which the Golden Rose is now given to shrines. We have Fatima received it from Paul VI. John Paul gave it to Lourdes Częstochowa in Poland, of course, in Loreto. And the Pope, when he was in Brazil, Pope Benedict, when he was in Brazil last year, gave it to the shrine of Our Lady of Aparecida. And now just one or two other interesting notes. There are Carmelite nuns, cloistered nuns in Savona. They will be allowed to leave their cloister to see the Pope for the day. And they're going to meet him at the shrine in Savona, Our Lady of Mercy. Some of them have never even been to that shrine. They entered the cloistered order very young. They've never been to the shrine. They are also going to print the parchment that will contain the prayer that the Pope will say when he gives the golden rose to the shrine, and they've also prepared the altar cloth for that. So lots of special things actually happening in Savona. There is a special first day cover for stamps. You have various commercial organizations have gotten together, and they've prepared 20,000 bags with little souvenirs and prayer books and so forth for pilgrims. And, oh, a very interesting thing, actually, about the Mass. The diocese had decided to have a collection for the Pope's charity. And then the Caritas, diocesan Caritas in Savona, decided that it might be a good idea to give this to the people of Myanmar. They wrote the Vatican. The Vatican wrote back and said, that's an absolutely lovely idea. So the collection that they're going to take up in the diocese and give to the Holy Father will be destined to the people of Myanmar. So it's going to be a very interesting, though obviously a very brief visit to Savona. And interesting little things. We're going to all be hearing about it on the radio and as the Pope delivers his homilies and so forth, and watching it on television.
Pope Pius VII spent his time in Savona imprisoned by Napoleon in the Episcopal Palace. The Pope prayed to the Virgin of Mercy for protection, and news of his release came on the very eve of the feast of the first apparition in Savona, the 17th of March.
The 6th of July, 1809, the Pope was arrested from the army, the soldiers of Napoleon, and they had to take him. He was old, and he was known as a very good and wise man. This is why maybe the emperor was afraid of his power and his charisma. And so he was taking him to Grenoble. But instead, a few days after, an order of the emperor took him back and took him in this small city of Savona. This perhaps because, as it was a small city, could have been less important, and he would have been less remembered, maybe, in his opinion. Instead, when he reached Savona in 1809, as he remained there up to 1812, so 3 years, when he arrived, he knew about this shrine because the pastor of the parish of the Church of the Genoese in Rome had given him, a few days before he was arrested in Rome, a small image of the Our Lady of Mercy.
Pope Pius VII was very devoted to Our Lady of Mercy, and when he was imprisoned in the Quirinal Palace in Rome and taken away, a priest stuck an image of Our Lady inside his cassock. On Napoleon's orders, he was brought here to Savona, and when he took out the image of the Madonna, he realized it portrayed Our Lady of Mercy, who appeared here in Savona. He felt this was a sign of providence. It was here in Savona that Pius VII was held for some 3 years in prison. During that period, Napoleon did his best to cut off the Pope from the outside world and treated him sometimes very well, but at other times he let him go hungry. In the Pope's prison apartment, you can still see today the holes in the walls that Napoleon's guards used to spy on the Pope. Of that period, we also have beautiful stories of people who brought him letters inside vegetable baskets. It was really daring that it allowed him to stay in touch with the outside world, circumventing Napoleon's orders. What he was really able to avoid, something Napoleon wanted instead, was the convening of a council which would give Napoleon power to name bishops without the Pope's authorization. Thanks, in fact, to a letter the Pope was able to get to the bishops, this never happened.
He remained all the time in his rooms to prove and to show to the world how he was really arrested and not a free man, to make everybody understand what was happening to him and to the church, obviously. What happened is that in 1812, Napoleon decided to move him from Savona to Fontainebleau, and only two years later, he moved him back to Savona. All these movements from and back to Savona, I never found out why this happened, why did the emperor do this. But I know that suddenly in 1814, the Napoleon was not anymore as powerful and things were not going so well for him. So he decided that could have been a good thing to let free the Holy Father. And as it happened, the day before, the 17th of March, the day before of the feast, the celebration of the mercy of
Our Lady of Mercy.
The Holy Father also saw this as a message, and saw it like a help that he a lot prayed for to Our Lady. And so when he left this city a few days after to go to Rome, he decided the year after to come back with the cardinals and to make a big celebration. Because I didn't say that years before, at the time of the Napoleon, in the beginning when he was arrested, a very sad thing happened. The golden crown of the statue of Our Lady of Mercy has been stolen.
It was stolen.
Yes,
about that time.
from some people. And so the people of Savona always asked, since he was arrested in 1809, to bring back this crown with a ceremony. And he did not do it up to when he came back in the 1815. And so at that point he decided to make this ceremony. And I've been told, I read that he kneeled in front of the statue, prayed and cried and thanked for what happened, and then went back to the city of Rome.
So one wonders if Pope Benedict's visit to Pius VII's prison apartments carries a deeper meaning to reflect on.
Messaggio che viene da questa esperienza della Chiesa in un momento così travagliato è che lo Spirito Santo.
The message of an experience from such a tormented period of church history is that the Holy Spirit truly helps the church. And this is true just a few years before the election of Pius VII. The French Revolution decreed that his predecessor, Pius VI, was to have been the last pope, since the church was by then obsolete, finished. Then Pius VII was elected, and he was truly able to meet the difficulties and to navigate the church through the tempest. And he was able to resist Napoleon. All of this tells us, in today's world, that truly the Holy Spirit does not abandon the church, even if there are moments in which it seems that Peter's bark is about to sink. It seems to me this is a message of great hope for the world today.
A similar message of hope is found by the thousands of pilgrims who make their way every year to the Shrine of Our Lady of the Watch, just outside Genoa, the same sanctuary where Pope Benedict was to spend Saturday night.
It's very important for us from Genoa, this shrine. It is, Ceranesi, in fact, is 20 kilometers from Genoa, so it's really near. It is on a mountain. It's called, this mountain is 804 meters above the level of sea. This is why it's called of the guard, because at that time, that mountain was very important to see when the armies or the fleet of the enemies were arriving to Genoa, because it is really on top of the city, on looking on the port, on the harbor. So you can really check. This is why they called it like this.
What does it look like? You've been there so many times.
Yes, it is beautiful because you climb, obviously with cars, but you climb on this mountain, and when you reach the top of this mountain, there is huge sanctuary, and if you look all around, you see nothing. It's like if it was built on top of this big mountain. Now it's made, it is really big, so you have rooms where people can go to sleep, pilgrims can reach there. Most of the people walk up there. I did it many times because it's a devotion to the, it's also a beautiful walk. In the past, they used to go on their knees, and that was a bit more tough, but I never did that. But walking is also really a beautiful thing to do. But the fact is that, again, a very poor peasant called Benedetto Pareto in the year 1490 was on that mountain, and the Holy Mary appeared to him and told him that she was the Regina Coeli. And as he did not understand, she said, "I'm the mother of Jesus." At that point, he certainly understood who she was. And she asked him to build a chapel. And he said, "But I'm very, very poor. I can't build a chapel because I don't have any money." And she said, "Don't worry, I will help you in doing that." He went back home and told his wife about it. And his wife said, "Up to now, they knew that you are nothing, nobody special. But now they will think you're crazy talking about this story." And so he was very sad. The next day, climbing on a tree to take some fruit, he fell down and very badly fell on the floor. And he was dying. So they gave him the sacraments. And waiting for him to die, they had no hope. And at that point, Our Lady appeared again to him. And he recovered instantly, and the people around him at that point could not think of anything else but a miracle, and he found a lot of people at that point helping him to build this first chapel. This shrine is very important for us, but it is very important all over the world. I went many times. The last time was a few months ago. You can't imagine around the world how many church of the Holy Mary of the Guard, the Virgin of the Guard are, and they're all trying to send money and try to in some way to help this huge sanctuary that in fact is more sending money to them than the opposite.
But how big is it now?
Oh, it is. It is a big, now it is a big sanctuary. It's a beautiful church also to visit. And
does it draw a lot of pilgrims every year?
Yes, thousands, but you know, it is in considered, it's strange. I was speaking with the pastor of the parish of La Guardia, that he was saying that most of the people coming are not coming from Italy, but they're coming from South America and from Argentina, where there is a great, because you know, this is the reason why, because many Genoese moved to Argentina many years ago and started. And when you leave from your city, when you go away, you bring with you the most important thing, and certainly the Holy Mary of Guard is one of the things that we all carry in our heart when we move.
Gian Antioco Chiaveri is a member of the Knights of Malta from Genoa in the northern Italian region of Liguria. And earlier we heard from Bishop Vittorio Lupi of Savona Noli and from our Vatican expert Joan Lewis. The Apostolic Nuncio to Egypt and the Arab League, Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, on Saturday addressed a course for African diplomats here in Rome.
The course was organized by the Gregorian Foundation and the Jacques Maritain Institute to introduce diplomats from countries where Christians are a minority to the work of the Church and the involvement of the Holy See in international affairs. Archbishop Fitzgerald spoke with Philippa Hitchin about the initiative.
It's an interesting initiative, I think, that the Gregorian Foundation, together with the Jacques Maritain Institute, has offered this course. It did so last year, as you know, for people from the Middle East, and there were Egyptians, or at least one Egyptian, taking part in that. This year for Africa, it's to help them to understand the Catholic Church, the Holy See, the involvement of the Church in international affairs. They are also going to visit Turin and look at some of the social work of the Church. So this is designed to give diplomats an idea, an understanding of how and why the Church is involved in international affairs.
To give greater visibility or perhaps even a higher profile to the Church in these countries where Christians are often a very small minority.
That is one of the roles of a nuncio, certainly, that to, in a sense, to defend the interests of the Church. Sometimes the Church does not have access to corridors of power, if you like, whereas the nuncio, as an ambassador, can have greater access and so can act as an intermediary for the concerns of the Church there. I discovered that when I was working in the Council for Interreligious Dialogue, when we went to have meetings in different places, it was only then really that I discovered, how important the nunciature could be and how useful they could be in some countries. So I think it could also help the Holy See, because the Holy See wants support also for some of its positions in the international world, and it could help them to get the sympathetic ear of ambassadors or future ambassadors of African countries.
As nuncio, not just to Egypt, of course, but also to the Arab League, it's one of perhaps the most interesting, perhaps the most challenging of the nuncio's positions.
Well, all nunciatures have different, we don't have the problem of arranging the appointments of bishops, because they're mostly Oriental churches who have a synodal system. But there is this role of the, not to the, some people think that I should go to visit all the countries of the Arab League. No, that's not it. I'm just there to attend meetings at the headquarters of the Arab League and attend the formal meeting at the beginning and some of the briefings that take place afterwards, but also sometimes make contact with the people in the Arab League. There is potential there. The Arab League itself is in a certain amount of crisis at the moment. The Arab world is not really united, and so it's difficult sometimes for the Arab League to do what it wants to do even. Let us hope that the Arab League initiative in the Lebanon will succeed, and this will bring something and can restore the prestige of this movement, this body, which I think can be a very useful body.
Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, the Apostolic Nuncio to Egypt and the Arab League. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.